The new year is here, and it's the perfect time to kickstart your meditation practice. The Morning Meditation for Women podcast has short, daily guided meditations that will help you start your day with intention and focus, and make it so easy to get you into the habit. Imagine feeling so much more calm and confident in 2025. Follow and listen to Morning Meditation for Women on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And that is my cheering section for Al Schock. Yeah. Thanks, Al. Checks in the mail. We're back only this morning. We are pleased to have our friend Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M answering any kind of a lawn or garden question. Now, Julie, we're hesitating here because there's a, between Julie and I can hear an echo, which has fortunately disappeared.
That's gone. Yay.
Yay. Yes. High tech stuff here. Let's get that gerbil running on that electrical.
Feed the squirrels.
Yeah. Anyway, we're back at it. And believe it or not, we've got the two tin cans and the string. And we're going to be broadcasting these 50,000 watts over that. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, please let us know. The easiest way, I think, this morning would be by text. You can always call us, and Ryan will do his best to get you on the air. But in the meantime, if you have a lawn or garden question and you are able to text, that we can take care of right away. How do we do that? How do you do that? Call us or text us again, same number, 651-461-9226. Well, Julie, you're back at it today. We appreciate your expertise. What and there was some moderating in temperatures, and that's kind of good in for a lot of folks. Those folks that really love the snow, it's not such good news. But what are you doing this time of year? I mean, seed catalogs reading. What are you doing for gardening?
Well, I'm riding the roller coaster of temperatures, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Feel like you got to hang on tight. It's been crazy. It's been crazy. And it makes it kind of tricky in thinking about the health of your plants going forward. You know, without that snow, we don't have that extra protection that we normally would. And I'm hoping that we do get some more snow coming along here. It's been so cold. But I've been reading a lot. I do a lot of reading in the winter of all different kinds of publications and books. We are planning our spring coming up here and planning to figure out what we're going to plant in the foodscape out at the Arboretum. So Laura and I have been putting our heads together with our chefs and finding out, like, what do we need to grow so that we can supply the kitchen with some really important ingredients and then show people how to grow those and how to harvest them safely. So doing a lot of reading, a lot of thinking about plants. That's about it. So
it sounds like kind of fun, actually.
Yeah, not too bad. It's a nice job to have,
I should say. The Arboretum, I mean, 52 weeks a year, there's always something going on there.
Yeah.
And your office there was just kind of neat in itself.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. What is going on at the Arboretum?
The Arboretum Flower Show starts pretty quick here in February, and it is going to be rocking. It's going to be amazing. The decorations and the way that Jewel Engstrom and her team are designing, every year it's a big surprise, and every year it's super successful. And so this year, I can't believe what they've done with materials that they've harvested right on the property grounds and then created these amazing hanging art forms out of, say, the grasses collection. That's Mary's collection. And just really taking in old trunks of trees that have come down over the past year and setting them up like little gnome villages and all sorts of really cool stuff. So Be sure to come out and see the flower show at least once. Come more if you can. And don't forget to stop at the Rootstock, our restaurant, and have some fantastic dishes that are created by Beth Chef Fisher and her team. So I'm really excited about it, as you can tell. I love the flower show. It's my favorite time of the year at the Arboretum.
And it's such a great place to bring family and friends.
Absolutely.
Again, I mention this a lot, you know, when people are visiting, and they're just thrilled. Is that, now, have you been to any other arboretum, or I guess in my Latin
Arborita.
Days, arboretum, in other parts of the country?
I have. I've been to the Chicago Botanic Garden, the Morton Arboretum. I've been out to, I've been to the Missouri Botanic Garden. The arboretum that's out at UC Davis is really cool in San Luis Obispo. I try to get to public gardens as much as I can when I travel. We don't travel a lot, but wherever I can go, I try to go there. I went to the Betty Ford Alpine Garden out in Colorado this past summer when Carl and I were traveling, and that was very cool to see alpine plants. They're very small, diminutive plants, but they are tough little buggers and really, really can survive the dry content, you know, the dry weather and the rough terrain that you get up in the mountains. So really a cool, cool garden. It's actually in Vail, Colorado. Mm. So really, if you're going to go to Vail, just be sure to visit that garden. It's pretty cool.
Well, we've got a neat one here, though.
We have one of the top arboreta in top arboretum. I'm not sure about the tense, but one of the best gardens in the nation, and it's regularly voted in at least in the top three or four gardens around public gardens in the United States.
I believe it. Yeah,
it is.
So get out there, and you do need to get online. I assume still make reservations for parking.
You can just visit the homepage at arb.umn.edu, and right away it says plan your visit and get tickets, and just follow the guides. You know, click through it, and you'll be able to take care of that. No problem.
Yeah, once you go, you're going to be coming back.
That's often. Right. Yeah, become a member. Then you know, you get all sorts of benefits with that as well.
Really do.
Pretty cool.
Okay, Texter says this, Julie. I read somewhere that the overuse of synthetic fertilizer can serve to deplete your soil supply of organic matter. Do you think that's likely the case?
I'm not a fertilizer expert in that respect, but I can say over-fertilization in general is a bad idea. Fertilizers are salts, and they can be detrimental to soil. They can dry out plant roots. And this is especially true in houseplants, is that they can, because those houseplants are in a really confined growing environment, and if you put too much fertilizer on those, it starts to actually degrade the roots. They start to dry out too much from those soluble salts. So that is over-fertilization is not a good idea. In other words, more is not better. It's better to, in the case of houseplants, to cut your fertilizer by half and to fertilize only when you see active growth in those houseplants. And out in your garden and landscape, over-fertilization can result in stunted plants, plants that aren't very productive, a lot of drying, burning of plant leaves. It's not as likely out in the landscape because, again, you have this enormous area that you're growing in versus like a container of plants that you're fertilizing. So follow the instructions, even cut back a little bit from those, you know, cut it in half if you're concerned. Be sure you dissolve water-soluble fertilizer well in water. And also, before you water a plant, if it's been really dry, water it with just plain water first and get that soil nice and moist, and then do your fertilization after that. That will help the plant to take up that fertilizer better.
All right. Very good. Julie, hang on. Let's invite our listeners to join in. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, either by phone or by text, we'd love to hear from you. 651-461-9226. 651-461-9226. Our temperature will be dropping. We're at 24 right now. That may be our high for the day. We'll be dropping to 7 overnight. Sunshine tomorrow, we'll get a high near 30. But listen to this. Monday, we could get up to near 38. Tuesday, near 39. Wednesday, falling to around 22. But then back up to 32. Thursday, near 39. Friday. It's a quick look at that forecast. Right now, mostly cloudy, 24 degrees. From News Talk 830, this is WCCO. Yeah, we thank Great Garage Floors for sponsoring our Smart Garden Show every week. Great Garage Floors, Great Garage. Yeah, love that floor. So easy to clean. Julie Weisenor is with us from the U of M, answering any kind of a lawn or garden question you may have, and we welcome yours at 651-461-9226. Have a bunch here, Julie. We were talking about the Arboretum, and a listener wants to know, are there any webinars coming up?
Well, there's a lot of classes at the Arboretum, and you can find all of those listings under the Learn tab. And there's at-home gardening, there's classes, there's travel tours, health and well-being programs, all sorts of different things. And the school programs, the camps are currently open for signing up your kids for the summer. So those are really popular. They fill up very quickly. So take a look at those. But yeah, you can just check out the at-home gardening or the classes that we have. And there are all sorts of different categories for those. And you can check out online as well as in-person classes too. So yeah,
sounds
really
great.
Fabulous ones. There's one called ProHort that's, I think, still, it might have already started, but it's a very comprehensive class that that people can take. Covers all areas of gardening and landscaping and lawn care and insects and you name it. It's actually the same curriculum that Master Gardeners go through.
That'd be kind of
so,
fun.
Yeah, it's a really cool one. It's online. And I don't know if you can still sign up for it or not. It might be closed by now. It might have already started. But take a look at the classes and the Learn tab, and you'll find anything and everything to interest you, I'm sure.
Excellent. You can call us or text us with your lawn and garden question like folks are doing, 651-461-9226. Here's another text, Julie. When we put our new plants or pot our new plants this spring, can we use any of the old soil or do we need to all use all new potting soil? Good question.
That's a really good question because soil's, it's kind of expensive. It's heavy to haul. If your plant has been if the previous plant that grew in it was healthy, didn't have any disease issues, you can use that soil again and just you can amend it with some compost or some peat moss just to kind of bump up the nutritional value of that soil. You can add a little Osmocote in there or something that's a slow-release fertilizer. That can help as well in containers. The one caveat to that is if you have been growing a plant like a tomato or a pepper in the same pot, you don't want to plant a tomato or pepper in that pot again. And the reason for in that soil, because there are soil-borne diseases that can just overwinter and transfer right onto your new plants the next year. So in that case, if I grew a tomato in a big container one year, I would plant something like herbs in that container this coming year. Again, you can amend the soil, but that way you're not kind of perpetuating the disease cycle of providing, having the pathogen in the soil and then providing some kind of host for it. And that would be the pepper or tomato plant. Those are in the same family. They're in the nightshade family along with potatoes and eggplants and tomatillos. And all of those are susceptible to similar or the same soil-borne pathogen diseases. So we want to rotate those. You're rotating your crop in your containers.
All right. Good question. Texter wants to know, here's something we haven't had for a couple of weeks. Given the roller coaster weather, snow, no snow, cold temps, can we still dormant seed?
Yes, you can still dormant seed. You can dormant seed up till March. And you can do that. And if you can time it with a snow cover, that would be great, because that actually protects the seed from it blowing away or from birds eating it. But also as that snow melts, it adds moisture to the soil and it will help those seeds to germinate better. So yes, you sure can still dormant seed at this point.
It's good.
Yeah.
Texter says this, Julie, our flowering crabapple tree has apple scab. We are scheduled for 2 treatments this spring. How successful are these treatments is the first question, or should we just replace it?
Well, those are 2 options. One is to treat the plant or to replace it. So, yes, those are 2 choices that you would make as a homeowner. As far as treatment goes, if you your certified arborist should be able to time those treatments to apply that herbicide or pesticide before the disease becomes an issue. So, with apple scab, you have to you have to treat before you see the disease. So it's something that you time, and that's exactly what this texter is doing, which is the right way to do that. So if they're timed correctly, a lot of times it has to do with the weather, how severe a disease might be. If we have a drier spring, you may see less of that apple scab, but if we have a wet, cool spring, you might see more of it. But that treatment and the timing of that treatment is important. So it sounds like you got a handle on that. The other option is to replace the plant, is to remove that tree and choose an apple scab resistant crab apple. And there are hundreds of crab apples out there that have been bred to be disease resistant. And remember that they're resistant, they're not immune. So you may still see some apple scab on it, but the resistant varieties or cultivars have less susceptibility and therefore can kind of power through the disease in a better way.
Very good. Listener says this via text, Julie, if my birch tree was taken down by an arborist in error, will the shoots from the trunk become a new tree?
Oh, well, first of all, I'm sorry that that tree was taken down in error. That's too bad. If there are shoots, I don't know if birch produce a whole lot of shoots from that. I'm not sure. Maybe they're coming up now. It's going to be a weird looking tree though. Chances are you're not going to have a nice central leader. You're going to have this kind of shrubby growth that's not very strong. So I guess I would cut my losses at that point and remove the trunk and go ahead and plant a new type of birch.
Yeah, that sounds like it would happen that way.
Sounds like it wouldn't look very good.
Yeah. Julie, hang on. Time for a break to look at that forecast. Let's do that. If you're just joining us, Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M, answering any kind of a lawn or garden question you may have. Text or call 651-461-9226 on this Smart Garden Show presented by Great Garage Floors. Stay with us. And welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday here on CCO. Thanks to our friends at Smart Garden Show. That's the title of the show, Smart Garden. And it is brought to us by our friends at Great Garage Floors. Great people. Great service, too. This listener, by the way, if you're just joining us, Julie Weisenhorn is answering our questions this morning. Julie from the U of M. Now, this is about a dwarf Alberta spruce. This texter bought one from the Boy Scouts at Christmas. Can I plant it outside and how?
Okay. So these are really small little elfin trees. They're a pyramidal shaped spruce. They're somewhat fine textured, really cute little plants. If you do plant it outside, and you'd want to check to see what its hardiness zone is. It may not be hardy through the winter here in Minnesota, but you can certainly put it outside in the spring. So as our temperatures warm up and we get some, 50 degree nights or so, maybe 45, you could put that tree out in a kind of protected area to help acclimate it into the outdoors. So that means acclimated area means like maybe in the shade, out of the wind. Be sure that it stays watered well so that it can really, supplement the moisture needed to hold onto its leaves. It won't turn brown. And then as the weather gets nicer and the tree is more acclimated to the outdoors, maybe every few days, move it into a little bit more sun so that it can then be in full sun ultimately. I think these plants are part sun, full sun. But again, do a little bit of research, find out its hardiness zone. If it's something that can survive the zone that you live in, then you could plant it out in your garden, out in your landscape. And then, but if it's not hardy, then you'd want to bring it back inside in the winter and decorate it for your holidays. So, yeah, they're really cute little plants.
651-461-9226 if you have a lawn or garden question for Julie. Here's one asking for some specifics on how I can set my poinsettia plant outside this summer and have it bloom again inside next winter.
I'm going to refer you to our poinsettia page on the Extension Yard and Garden site because I spent a lot of time writing it. So take a look at that. Yes, you can move your poinsettias outside and they'll be a green shrubby plant for the season. And then you'll have to do some kind of magic work inside where you put that plant into darkness for about 14 to 16 hours a day. Take it out, put it in the sun, water it as you would, keep it moist, follow good care guidelines. And then every day you have to put it back into those 14 to 16 hours of darkness. That means like no light whatsoever. So a very dark closet. But don't forget about it. That's what I did. I put mine in the closet, completely forgot about it, killed the plant. So that happens. But take a look at the webpage. It explains really well how to take care of it and to take care of it throughout the year.
So that's out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, that's extension.umn.edu. And go to our yard and garden page. And it's going to be under your houseplant section.
Yeah, we'll mention that again before
Sounds
you leave
good.
Us. It's just a great website. Julie Texter says, comes from Mary. What are your thoughts on using cover crops in vegetable gardens? Do you plan to use in the foodscape?
So cover crops are crops that we grow and then we cut them back or we till them into the soil. And it helps to deal with disease, but it also helps to replenish some of the nutrients in the soil. We have a webpage on cover crops that you can read about under the vegetable section. And we do not use them at the foodscape yet. We might do that in the future. But right now we grow a lot of our annuals. We're going to be growing a lot of them in containers. And that's mostly because of animal issues. We have a really brash bunch of turkeys who waddle around the foodscape picking out the plants we've planted in the ground. So Laura and I are going to go on the turkey combat this spring and grow a lot of our plants in containers where we can fence them really easily. So, cover crops are a great idea, especially if you have some somewhat questionable or you're feeling like your soil is getting a little depleted. And that's one way that you can do that. So there are times to plant cover crops in the spring. For 30 days, you grow them out, and then you till them in, and you let them sit for 30 days, something to that effect. I'm not an expert on cover crops, but there's a good web page that you can read about that.
Very good. This listener, Julie, was given a Phalaenopsis orchid. It is in a tiny pot with very little soil and no drainage. How do I care for it, and will it bloom again?
Okay, well, Phalaenopsis, or the moth orchid, is an orchid that is an epiphyte. So that means that it does not grow in soil. It's not terrestrial. And so it should be growing in bark. So very little soil, very little bark, I imagine. So it's in a tiny pot. It might be a smaller type of Phalaenopsis, which is fine. Usually with orchids, what I find is until they start to really produce a lot of roots that are growing outside of the pot and starting to kind of climb, I always like to think they're kind of climbing out of the pot. You really don't have to repot them. But it is important that you keep them properly hydrated. So in the case of that plant, you could set that plant into a separate dish and put in some distilled or reverse osmosis water. This is water you can buy at the grocery store. It has nothing in it. There's no fluoride. There's no chlorine. It's just water. And so you can pour it and let it just sit in there about a half an hour, 20 minutes, until that bark becomes hydrated. So that's fir bark that it's growing in probably, or it might be also a mix of sphagnum moss. And that helps to hold in moisture. That moisture gets to the roots and that sustains the plant.
It's not a garden question, but a fan wants to know when the abiders are playing next.
Ooh, wow. Thanks for the plug. We are actually playing February 8th. It's a Saturday night at Surfside in Mound. It's one of our favorite places to be and a lot of fun to play there. We're also putting in dates for 2025. So check out our website at theabiders.net. And you'll see that we've booked some gigs already coming up. We've got some really fun stuff coming up this summer, and Carl is working hard to book more gigs for us. So,
excellent.
But February 8th, 8 o'clock at Surfside in Mound.
That's coming up pretty quickly.
Coming up real fast, yeah, a couple weeks.
Very good. Is it, now, by the way, during in between sets, do you answer lawn and garden questions?
Absolutely, you know
it. I bet
it.
You do. All right. Just wondering. This listener, Julie, wants to know, is a downy serviceberry tree a good tree for the front yard in full sun?
Yeah, that's a great tree. Serviceberries are fabulous trees for Minnesota landscapes. They are hardy. They produce an edible fruit. Beautiful spring flowers. They have great fall color. And even their bark is a nice, smooth, kind of a soft gray color. And just a great plant. I would fence it initially because rabbits like to nibble on their bark, when especially when the plant is small. But yeah, downy serviceberry is a great idea.
You know what? I'm not only getting to the Arboretum to see these various things grow, but I've used the university's extension website to kind of pick out trees or shrubs. That's a great resource among many resources.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we're really proud of it. And I'm going to put a plug in for my new version of the Plant Elements of Design. It's a plant selection landscape or plant selection program. It's a tool that you can use to enter in the conditions that you have, that your growing conditions consist of, and then also what kinds of features you want in the plant. And there are about 2,500 plants on that list. We are adding more all the time. It's not available yet on that site. We have an old version, which is not in the best condition, but this one should be coming out in February sometime. So check back. It's going to be located under our landscape design section.
Excellent. We are located at 651-461-9226. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, we still have time for you. 651-461-9226. Here's another one. Can you grow yellow wax beans in the same soil, raised garden, new soil last year?
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. So wax beans are great. I'm not fond of the name. I don't know who came up with wax beans, but when I was a kid, I wouldn't eat them because I thought they were waxy. It's like skim milk. Skim milk wasn't very appealing either.
Well, wax beans, they kind of look like that, don't they?
Yeah, they look like that, but they're delicious. You know, they taste just like a green bean, but they're very good. My dad loved them. It was one of his favorite summer crops. But yes, you can definitely grow those in your raised bed, and good for you. Raised beds are super handy. They're really they're nice to grow plants in.
I'd still like to do that in the backyard.
You should. You should.
Yeah. I mean, there's it really is such a plus. And what do I think? No mowing. Make it a real big
above. Right.
Yeah.
But you don't have to bend over so far. You know,
that's true.
As we get older and our backs are a little more sore, you know, you don't have to bend over as much. You make it nice and tall, 24 inches and 30 inches.
Just reach over. Don't bend
over.
Reach over. All right, Julie, hang on. We're going to take a quick break and be right back on the other side. Just joining us, Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M, answering your lawn and garden questions here on our Smart Garden Show, presented every week by our friends at Great Garage Floors. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. Denny Long here, along with Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M. We've got a bunch of callers, Julie, and texters as well. Let's see if we can help as many folks as we can this morning. Tim is first up here, I believe, calling from Savage. Tim, thank you. What is your question for Julie?
Hi, Julie. My question is, I have a private pond, and we have a lot of cattails really taking it over. It's a small pond, and we want to you know, knock them back. And what can we? I really don't want to use chemicals. I want to make sure everything else is okay in the pond. But what can I do this winter to reduce my number of cattails?
Oh, good question. I guess if it was my pond, I'd be out pulling those cattails. I don't know how big the pond is and how, you know, feasible that is. But I would contact the Minnesota DNR and take a look at their website on controlling cattails. They're going to have some good advice so that, again, you're not, you know, causing a bigger problem by treating. They may also be able to advise you on what plants to plant in place of the cattails. So there's a lot of good shoreline plants that can help to outcompete the cattails. They're a tough plant because they have a big, thick root system. But, you could start with pulling them. I don't know if you can do it this winter or not, you know, if you can. But as soon as spring comes, start yanking them out. But talk to the DNR, too. Give them a call or go to their website.
Okay. Another caller, Tom, is on the horn, calling in from Minnetonka, I believe, this morning. Tom, thank you. What is your question?
Yeah, I cleared out a huge amount of buckthorn and then tried to do a restoration. I moved wildflowers from our cabin, stuff like that. Didn't do really well through the last four drought years, whatever. This year it came back beautifully. Then it flooded and it killed, the arborvitae that are out there, some serviceberry, some other stuff, forsythia. Are the wildflowers going to probably be dead too? Because they were done blooming when this game happened.
Yeah, well, good for you for restoring quickly. That's one of the key things about buckthorn is to replant right away. And it sounds like you chose some really good plants to replant with. I can't weigh in on the wildflowers, but wildflowers are pretty resilient. If they're Minnesota wildflowers, they are accustomed to fluctuating kinds of moisture content. If they are if they're not coming back like you expect, then I would, again, replant again. You can either replant with plants directly, transplants, or you can also look at possibly some seed. And you can contact one of our native plant nurseries here in Minnesota. There's a list, again, I'm going to plug the DNR site. There's a nice list of native nurseries. And you can go ahead and contact them about the best kinds of seed to put down for your plants. But yeah, you may want to just buy some plugs too to plug in where those plants maybe didn't survive through the flood. But I bet they're going to be okay.
All right, good. Let's grab one more call before we run out of time. Catherine's calling in from Blaine, I believe, this morning. Catherine, you're on with Julie.
Good morning. I have an amaryllis that I was given this year. And it's in a bulb. Yeah, I don't know if you've ever seen that, Julie. I mean, it's completely, it's like a red bulb. But now it's blooming like crazy, and it's beautiful. And I don't know what to do with it after this. Do I just leave it?
Or? Okay. So these are bulbs that have been waxed, and they are kind of a hot new thing, especially for people who want to put an amaryllis on a tabletop and they don't want to have a big container and a saucer and worry about watering the plant. You don't do anything to these waxed bulbs. But when it's done blooming, then peel that wax off of the bulb and pot it up in just a regular potting soil. And then pot it up and treat it like a house plant and just water it, put it in a sunny window, and it should grow really nicely. In the summer, put it outside. Put it in kind of a shady, protected area initially, and then you can move it into a little bit more sun and grow it through the summer. It'll photosynthesize through its big leaves, and then go ahead and it will add a lot of energy into that bulb for next year. And then you want to take that bulb and put it into a dark area for about 12 weeks before the freeze hits. Take it back inside. And then take it out and water it in the sun, and you'll probably have another bloom, a flush of bloom. But you can't grow it all year long in that wax because the bulb ultimately needs to have some water and be able to photosynthesize and get a lot of energy into there. But we have a great website, a webpage on amaryllis that explains exactly how to handle that. So go ahead and take a look at that. But yeah, take that wax off when it's done blooming.
Okay. I don't want to leave our textures out of the picture here. Here's another one. Julie, I didn't bring my fern inside soon enough this fall. I cut it back, and just this week cut it totally back. Do I keep watering or let it go dormant in the basement?
Oh, boy. I'm not a fern expert, that's for sure. I think we have a page, though, on ferns, and you could take a look at that information. There are also, you know, there's also a lot of societies that specialize in certain plants. And I'm wondering if there's a fern society somewhere in America or in the world, and they may be able to give information about that. But I think I would keep giving it some water to keep it moist. You can always try and then bring it out into the light as soon as you can so that it can start to maybe regrow. So you may have killed it by leaving it out too long, but it kind of depends.
Okay.
Depends on the type of fern.
A couple of minutes to go on the show. A question from a listener. Do you have any resources about native grasses? I am removing boxthorn from a large property.
Oh, good heavens. Yes, we do. We are fortunate. Mary Meyer, who's one of our team members on Smart Garden, she has a great web page in our yard and garden section on Extension called Native Plants. And native grasses are her thing. That is her area. I mean, she is an expert in a lot of stuff, but that is her favorite area, I believe, to work in. She's the curator for our ornamental grass collection at the Arboretum, which is a wonderful place to go and see grasses and get ideas for your property. But visit our website at extension.umn.edu. go to Yard and Garden and visit native plants. And there's a whole bunch of stuff on grasses there. And she has a great book, too, called Ornamental Grasses for Cold Climates. It's my primer when it comes to looking for good grasses.
Excellent. I'm looking at maybe one more quick one, because we're almost out of time. I understand Texas is having two apple trees in my yard would help the blooms and produce fruit. One has produced edible fruit yearly, but the other has never fruited. Nice, healthy-looking tree, but no fruit. What do you think, quickly?
So, quickly, if you have an apple tree, if your neighbor has a crab apple, or if there's crab apples in your neighborhood, you'll get cross-pollination. Having two trees is ideal. The second one may just not be old enough yet. Trees have to reach a certain maturity level before they start to produce fruit. So just be patient, keep it healthy, and hopefully you'll have fruit soon on it.
And a couple of things to remember: get to the arboretum.
Yes.
Go online, and check in, and you won't regret it. You'll love
That's
it there
right.
if you haven't.
Yeah,
done it.
Flower show.
Flower show, and don't forget to check out the University of Minnesota website, and that is
right.
What, Julie?
Right, extension.umn.edu, and we are under Yard and Garden.
Excellent. Julie, have a great week, and again, the Abiders are playing February?
February 8th, two weeks from today at Surfside and Mound.
Julie, we'll talk soon.
Thanks a lot, Denny. Good luck.
Thanks so much.
Okay.
And Julie Weisenhorn from the University of Minnesota. Thank you, Julie.